Our main differentiator is not slightly lower interest rate, but it's to offer the appropriate type of financing.
Innovations in Sustainable Finance. A University of St. Gallen podcast by Julian Kölbel.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Innovations in Sustainable Finance, where we discuss new ideas, bold ideas, and dangerous ideas in the area of sustainable finance. I'm very happy to have as my guest today Christoph Gostenau. He is partner and chairman of the board of Fair Capital, an interesting company that we're going to hear more about. And Christoph, it's great to have you on the show.
Thank you, Julian. Happy to be here.
So to kick us off, what does Fair Capital do in a nutshell?
So Fair Capital was founded to create innovative financing solutions for the fair trade system. We work mainly with smallholder farmer organizations in the Global South, but also with other actors along the transparent supply chains of the sectors where we are active in. The sectors include cocoa, coffee, exotic fruit, but also avocado, nuts, and other products.
That sounds like a lot of yummy things you're dealing with. And so you focus on the fair trade system with your financing, and also on the website, it says you address the typical financing gaps in fair trade production. So can you tell us what these typical financing gaps are?
So the financial sector in many countries in Latin America and Africa are still quite inefficient and do not adapt their offerings to the needs of smallholder farmers. These smallholder farmers are often organized in cooperatives or associations, so they can export together directly to their international clients who are able to offer them a better price. But to do so, they need working capital, they need a professional infrastructure, and they also need sometimes to make more substantial investments in the long term into plantation renovation or transformation of plantations towards organic production. So there is a variety of needs that require a lot of different financing solutions that we try to extend to the fair trade system.
So that's very interesting, I find, because what I hear you saying is that there are entrepreneurs or organizations who do something that's economically viable and have the option to expand even. So there's a market for what they do, but they are constrained from doing that by a lack of financing. And if I get you right, it's not just a general lack of financing, it's sort of a lack of specific financing that fits their needs.
That's correct, yes. So while banks are well positioned to provide financing in the countries where they're registered, they sometimes don't focus on what we consider very important as impact investors. And these fair trade supply chains, they're designed for smallholder farmers to participate in transparent supply chains, to be able to sell their high quality products at a price premium. And this is something which creates specific financing needs. And so we are specialized to offer solutions for such financing needs, yes.
So maybe it would be nice if you can walk us through a typical deal that, you know, on the financing side. How does that work?
Of course. So an example that we like to use is the example of UNOCASE in Ecuador. UNOCASE is a union of cocoa farmers, and they are one of the most important suppliers of a Swiss chocolate factory. And in 2020, we learned from the Swiss chocolate factory that they would like to purchase more cocoa from the smallholder farmers in Ecuador, and that there actually is more cocoa, and the bottleneck is financing. So we talked to UNOCASE about this and learned that all they needed was $250,000 to purchase a couple of new drying machines so that they could dry the cocoa faster and make sure that all the cocoa produced by the farmers which participate can go into export. So in the first step, this is what we provided, a loan of $250,000 to resolve this bottleneck, which helped them to increase sales from a little bit more than $4 million to almost $8 million. So they almost doubled their sales. So in the second step, we also facilitated a larger credit line for working capital financing in collaboration with our main institutional partner.
Very interesting. It's $250,000, I think, was the size of the first loan. Is that a lot, or is that large or small in that context?
That's a good question. So I think it depends always on the perspective. But I mean, for us as impact investors, investing internationally, loans, $150,000 to $500,000 are considered small. And then everything which is above $500,000 up to about $2 or $3 million is the typical sweet spot for investors like us. And then, larger loans are then also easier to get from the banking system, but obviously only for organizations which have achieved a certain size and they also have the necessary collateral.
And maybe on that issue of, you know, what could banks in that those countries provide? So in that specific example with UnoKase, what was the problem? Why didn't they just contact a local bank and get this credit?
They already had a mortgage with a local bank, but it was not possible to increase the credit line with the bank. And the bank would not consider the machinery as sufficient collateral. They would not consider the export contracts that UnoKase has as an incentive enough to provide the financing, whereas Fair Capital is used to analyze the risks in also taking into account the partnerships that smallholder farmers have. And we considered that thanks to this very strong partnership with the Swiss chocolate factory, the risk was relatively low. And it was 2020. So we were in the middle of the first lockdown in many countries. It was the pandemic. And I think it was maybe a little bit daring. So if you look at this deal on paper, I understand that many investors would shy away. But for us, it was clear that with this strong partnership, commercial risks were very low. And we visited on several occasions the smallholder farmers and their management. And we're sure that we can do this transaction successfully. And well, now we can look back and say, yes, it was the right decision. And obviously, it's always nice to talk about the examples where with a relatively small amount, you can create a lot of impact.
On that note, on the impact, so I like to think of impact in the sense of, you know, what is the situation now? And we hear this, you know, it's a really good outcome versus what it would have been, let's say, if Fair Capital at this point couldn't have provided that loan. What do you think? What would have been the trajectory of UnoKase otherwise? And do you, is that even something that you try to look at?
We try to be very specific when we measure impact. So what we look at is the additional income generated by the smallholder farmer organizations, which in this case amounts to a lot, because basically thanks to our loan, they were able to increase sales by a little bit more than $3.5 million per annum. And the price premium generated on these sales was more than 30%. So we can basically, if we want to be very optimistic, we can claim additional income for smallholder farmers in Ecuador to the amount of 1 million per year on an investment of 250,000. I would say this is first a special situation. It's not always that easy to scale. It's not always such little investments which make the difference. And then also, to be realistic, I mean, it's not this loan by itself which makes the big difference. It's part of a series of factors which were important. Commercial factors are important. The strong partnership is important with the chocolate makers. And then also the working capital, which was provided later on to make sure that UnoKase is able to build up the inventory to pay out the farmers immediately and not have to wait until they get the payments from the client. So I think all in all, it's easier to measure the additional income created by the organization than claim how much of this additional income really corresponds to the particular investments that we did.
Very good. I find really interesting that partnership with a buyer, right? Because I see that point that for a bank locally, that might be a distant party that they don't know very well, but you are sort of, I'm sure you know people and you can sort of look at that contract, that existing contract of a Swiss company, you know, as a quite a secure asset that the cooperative has already. Is that often an important consideration in the financing you provide?
Yes, it is, Julian. Thank you for the question. So in many cases, the financing that we provide is very short term. We do a lot of what we call harvest financing. So the smallholder farmer organizations, they need cash during the harvest season. So the members of their organization can get paid immediately when they deposit the coffee, cocoa, or whatever good they produce with the cooperative. And there, it is important to know who is going to buy the product. And there we typically disperse against export contracts for this harvest season, which reduces to the risk to basically organizational and operational risks rather than market risks. So by the time that we provide the loan, we already know that there is sufficient product, so there is sufficient coffee or cocoa to be delivered, because it is already at the beginning of the harvest season and the climatic factors, other external factors are more or less controllable. And by then, we disperse the money so that harvest can begin. And it takes typically a couple of weeks, maybe a couple of months maximum until the product is shipped. And when the product is shipped, the client will make payment. So there is not too many things that can go wrong if you know your counterparts. And we really try to be very close to them, visit at least twice a year, be in a continuous exchange with their management to make sure that they also perceive us as a partner rather than an investor, which makes their life unnecessarily difficult. So we try to build these relationships of trust. And it's quite time consuming, but I think it pays out in the long run.
How do you build those relationships of trust? So do you go there, you know, or do you make site visits, or are you set up organizationally to do that?
Yes, so we do site visits twice a year. We have a regular exchange virtually with the management. And we have also our partners in the countries where we invest. Our investment team is based in Colombia and in Rwanda, which means that we cover the regions locally, regionally, rather than from Switzerland. And yeah, I think I cannot stress enough the importance of partnerships that we have, not only on the supply chain side, but also within the system of fair trade. So we work a lot with other organizations that promote fair trade. We work closely with Fair Trade Max Havela here in Switzerland and with their partners of the fair trade system in the Global South.
And in terms of the conditions of the loan, maybe that's also another interesting question. Is the sort of the interest rate, is that, you know, in line with what the market locally would offer, or do you give a discount? How is that? How do you deal with that?
Our main differentiator is not slightly lower interest rate, but it's to offer the appropriate type of financing. So our interest rates are typically between 7 and 13% in US dollar terms. And this depends obviously on the risk profile of our counterparts. And local banks would offer interest rates maybe at similar rates, but with a different type of collateral being asked for. And I think the alternative often is that instead of getting a loan as a cooperative, that individuals ask for loans as individuals. So we are in the microfinance space or in the consumer credit space where interest rates are not slightly higher, but a multiple of what we charge. So I think it's not so much about being 50 basis points cheaper or more expensive. I think it's about making the funding available when it's needed with a structure which makes economically sense to our investees.
I find that very interesting because it dovetails with research that we also see coming from the microfinance area, that it is a lot depends on the design and then the fit of the specific financial product, be that a micro insurance or a savings account, that it, you know, it's not worth a lot if it doesn't fit exactly the needs that are there. So it seems in your case you take that to practice, and it's a very bespoke financing that really is oriented towards the needs of these cooperatives and in sync with their harvesting cycles and so forth.
Yes, thank you. I mean, we try to be pragmatic and offer in every case that we learn about the best possible financing solution, even if that means that the loan doesn't come directly from Fair Capital or maybe not even out of our network. I mean, by now we have a good understanding of which actors can contribute to the different financing solutions. And yes, so sometimes it is a microfinance loan, which makes most sense. Sometimes it is maybe a prepayment directly from the client. And very often it is a combination of different financing solutions. And there, I think it's important also to consider the smallholder farmers as a counterpart at a DAI level and discuss with them the options that they have and also help them maybe structure their own balance sheet in a way that helps them achieve the best bottom line, the best financing cost and in average that they can have.
Let's talk about scaling. That's very good for the cooperatives if they have a very bespoke approach and also they get a lot of advice in how they could do things. How easy is it to scale that then? You know, I'm thinking for financial institutions, the desire is often to have something very, very standardized to drive down costs. How do you deal with that effort?
That's a very good question. And I'm actually very happy you ask us that because I think that's one of the key differentiators of Fair Capital. And we are set up as a private company in Switzerland that can act either as consultant or as investor. And this gives us a lot of flexibility. This flexibility allows us to not only provide the best solution to specific needs, but it allows us to work with our counterparts also as they grow. So very often we start with one first financing solution, the relationship. And then since we are there to build relationships in the long term, we then also try to pull in partners and other actors to contribute to the growth of these organizations. So if we are able to work with them over the years and as they grow, we also get to participate in this growth with larger financing solutions, which are maybe more cost efficient from our perspective. And I think this is really what we try to do. You know, we were set up to be flexible and to be able to work in the long term with our counterparts. And I think that is also what makes us economically stronger and more solid than other impact investors, which try to specialize on one specific financing need.
Interesting. It seems sort of in a nutshell, you take your clients seriously and try to deliver them a service.
Yes, of course. I mean, I think one interesting way to look at this is also that, you know, smallholder farmers, they belong to the bottom of the pyramid in the global south for sure. But I think at the same time, we have to take them seriously and consider them business partners while we try to support them. They are not asking for donations. They're asking for business opportunities. The fair trade system is able to provide commercial opportunities to them. And we follow the lead of the fair trade system and try to offer financing solutions, also considering our counterparts as clients and also trying to generate close to market level returns for our investors.
The partnership, or let me say it's the focus on fair trade certified cooperatives is an interesting feature of your business model. It seems to me that that of course limits the, you know, potential partners you have out there, but at the same time it gives you a neat baseline of some sort of pre-certification, which is otherwise you basically have to start from scratch and figure out if that is a business that you even want to support in the first place. Or is there more to it? That's kind of my view on why that is interesting.
Yes, I mean, from our perspective, this should be win-win. We benefit a lot from the work which has been done over the last decades by the fair trade system. At the same time, it is unfortunately quite common that impact investors focus on new and innovative approaches and kind of forget that in order to scale, you have to be there also in the long run, or somebody has to be there in the long run, because the fair trade system, it has been around for roughly about 40 years. And it has been, in our view, become more robust, more scalable, and more efficient. And this is where now there is an opportunity for impact investors to generate close to market level returns while creating measurable impact, which is also verified by external parties. So there's many benefits for us that we see in the fair trade system. And we would like to also kind of play our part in the scaling of the system. The demand for fair trade products is there. The turnover with fair trade certified products globally has been increasing year of the year over the last decades. And at the end of the day, the beauty of this system is that it is the consumer who makes the decision. It is the consumer who pays the price premium and finances the whole system. The consumer finances not only the extra income of the smallholder farmers, but also the certification system around it and the support which has to be provided to the smallholder farmers so they can participate in a very competitive international market. So we consider this as a great opportunity for us as impact investors and hope also to kind of give back to the system with efficient solutions and help them scale what they've been doing for the last decades.
Yeah, thanks. That's indeed quite interesting. And it's also nice that everybody, or, you know, most everyone probably knows these fair trade products. And it's fascinating that you're a little bit in the, you know, on the ground, seeing where these bananas, I'm not sure if they're included in your portfolio, but that's just the first thing that comes to mind, where and how they are produced. I'm sure there's a conversation to be had about, you know, what is, how good is really the fair trade situation, and are the wages higher, and who gets the benefits. But I think I'd like to focus more on what you do, and would like to move a little bit to the investment side. So you've walked us through a couple of examples on the investment side. Who are your clients there, and what is the scale that you're operating at the moment?
Of course. So we work with institutional investors that have substantial financial means and the capacity to evaluate the risks themselves. These institutional investors are invited to invest directly through Fair Capital and also to invest directly into the portfolio with Fair Capital as a consultant. So with these institutional investors, we manage today a portfolio of about $25 million. We were founded in 2019, and we have been able to grow every year since inception. We also see growth potential still in this client segment with institutional investors, but we also would like, obviously, to make our portfolio available to a larger population of impact investors.
So, is it possible as a private person to get in on the action?
Yes, I mean, for this, we launched in 2021 an initiative that we call Fair to See, that invites responsible consumers that want to support the fair trade system also with small parts of their savings. We created this initiative with a cooperative under Swiss law. So as a private investor, what you can do is you can buy a share of this cooperative, which is 5,000 Swiss francs. So it's a substantial amount, but it's bearable for, let's say, a certain segment of private investors in Switzerland. And the contribution which is made to the cooperative is used one-to-one, 100%, to finance the harvest of fair trade certified cooperatives. And in addition, the cooperative in Switzerland, the consumer cooperative, which we kind of like to see as a counterpart of the smallholder farmer cooperatives in the global south, they organize a lot of events and meet to experience the products that they have financed. And I think it's a beautiful initiative, which is also quite attractive for the members of this cooperative.
Yeah, that sounds nice. A cooperative here to help or finance cooperatives there. And then there's an exchange of goods. And I can very well imagine the yummy things you can get to eat at these cooperative annual meetings, perhaps. So this has existing at the moment, and have you been successful in recruiting some members for the cooperative? How is it going?
I mean, it always depends how you define success, but that we're very happy that more than 60 private individuals have joined us. We're very happy that by now we have financed more than 30 containers of fair trade coffee from 8 former organizations in 4 different countries. So I would say that we have started off very well, but obviously we're still trying to grow. We're still trying to attract more private individuals. Also, institutions can join the cooperative. It's just that when we limit, or the statutes of the cooperative limit the voting rights, so it means that no matter if you invest 5,000 or 500,000 in the cooperative, you have one voting right. And it is all about, you know, creating a community. So we obviously, first of all, think of the consumers that also then purchase the Fairtrade products in the supermarket, because this kind of creates also the necessary dynamic, because only financing the farmers in the South is not enough. We also have to be conscious of promoting the system here in the markets. And that's obviously, first of all, in Switzerland, the responsibility of Fairtrade Max Havelaar. But we also would like to kind of play a small role in this and help to create this consciousness in the consumer base in Switzerland.
Okay, so I'll look out for that. I think that's very interesting. And indeed, this combination of being both a consumer of these goods and an investor in their, you know, in the production is attractive. You know, also in the sense of that different stakeholders share the burden and the benefit sort of that you know, of that system, the systemic approach. So I think there's some consistency there. In terms of an investment, so you would buy into the cooperative for 5,000 Swiss francs, and then are there some sort of dividends, or is it just you hold on to that until you want to leave? How does that work? Is it an investment, really?
Yes, I mean, it is an investment. It is clearly an impact-first investment. But the dividend target that the cooperative has is 3%. So that's Swiss franc denominated, a 3% target return. The dividend can be slightly higher, but there is no capital gain. So as a cooperative, capital gains are not a possibility by regulation. And this is why the cooperative chooses to finance the smallholder farmers with the lowest risk profile of the fair capital portfolio. So far, we have been very successful. There have not been any major problems with the financings which have been done. And the 3% target return is very realistic, but obviously it has to be considered a risky investment, and it is a long-term commitment. It is possible, however, to retire as a member of the cooperative once a year, and the liquidity of the cooperative also assures that the redemption payments can be made to members leaving the cooperative. This because we only finance harvest from harvest to harvest, typically financing cycles of 3 to 12 months.
That is a very interesting aspect, because I was just about to ask. So thanks for answering that question already. So yeah, that's a clever setup. I think you mentioned before that there is the possibility of implementing Fair2C on a blockchain. So that sounds very interesting. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
With pleasure. So, I mean, obviously, when you talk about a cooperative in 2024, a lot of people will feel that this is a bit, you know, very old school and not on the edge of the latest technology that we can use today. However, we have in parallel also been developing a blockchain-based solution, which works very similar. So the blockchain solution would allow us to lower the minimum investment from 5,000 to literally zero, or 5 cents to be invested. But the challenge there is that in order to implement, you really need to scale from the beginning. So we have done a lot of preliminary work. So the technology has been developed in a collaboration with an academic institution here in Switzerland. And we have tested it, and it works very successfully. Economically, it makes a lot of sense as well, because what the token from this blockchain solution actually represents is a participation in the harvest pre-financing that we were just discussing. And rather than getting a cash out on this token, the idea is that you use the token as a means of payment to purchase your Fairtrade certified products in the supermarket. But for this system to work, then the supermarket actually needs to use the token to make payment to the importer of the fair trade product, whereas the importer uses the token to make the payment to the smallholder farmers to create an economic cycle where the token is created by the farmers when they need pre-harvest financing, and the token basically is served once the product is delivered against payment for the token. So you can imagine that a system like this only works well if you have a lot of actors participating and you reach a certain scale. There is possibilities to kind of facilitate the launch of a token with a bit of smaller scale and the market maker, which facilitates the transactions. But at the end of the day, we really rely on partnerships and, yeah, strong actors that help us to launch this token. This is why it's unfortunately still only a project and not a reality. So we cannot offer the token for sale as of today. But we are very optimistic that people adapt to the new technology available and as people get to know us as an organization, we will identify the right partners and be able to launch this token in the near future.
Wow. Well, it does sound very intriguing. And of course, one very noticeable advantage is that you could enter, you know, at a lower barrier than 5,000 Swiss francs, which is, of course, for many people who, you know, for many people, it's a lot. But I've lost you a little bit in terms of how many tokens there would be. So is that the same thing, what the farmer creates, a sort of, you know, a proof of a fair trade banana produced and, you know, entering the cooperative, that there's not two tokens? That would, you are trying to sort of have one token to rule the whole fair trade system, if I may. Is that the idea?
Well, this is maybe a question which we cannot answer as of today. So the way that we have designed the token, it can actually work as a additional investment opportunity rather than a replication of the cooperative that already exists. But it can go different ways, I would say. I think for us, the main objective is to mobilize financing for the smallholder farmers. And while we do that, we also would like to create solutions which are more suitable for private individuals. There, we have to be very conscious and very careful because, you know, at the end of the day, we cannot ask the students of the University of St. Gallen to participate in Fair2C with 5,000 Swiss francs. We can maybe ask the professors, but we talk about this maybe after this podcast.
Okay. And, I'm glad you say that.
And I mean, at the end of the day, we are very conscious of the financial budget of the people who would like to support the fair trade system. And this is why we are trying to create different solutions so that everybody can participate. However, right now, the reality is Fair2C is a cooperative under Swiss law. The minimum investment is 5,000 and we have to focus on this. And once we have the right partnerships to fully roll out the tokenized solution, we can then finalize how it's designed. So we can either decide to tokenize the existing cooperative, but that's also not only up to us, but also up to existing members. Mm-hmm. Or we can decide to work these two solutions in a parallel format. In reality, it will fund the same type of farmers. So it goes all into the same portfolio. Also, the institutional money goes into the same portfolio as the money from Fair2C, which we believe is important because we cannot ask private investors to bear higher risks than institutional investors. If any, it should be the other way around.
Very well. So that is fascinating, but as I understand, it's still in the future. So thanks for clarifying a few things around that. If we zoom out to the bigger picture, what do you think the things that can be achieved with financial services such as fair capital and where are perhaps also the limits of that?
Well, as innovative as we are, we can only finance opportunities that smallholder farmers, entrepreneurs, and their commercial partners have created. So there is a lot of opportunities within the fair trade system, and we want to make sure that these opportunities don't remain unexplored because of lack of financing. But this is the limitation. So we are also welcoming many new initiatives within or maybe even outside of the fair trade system as we know it today, We are pragmatic and not dogmatic in our approach. So if a social entrepreneur is currently not using the fair trade certification, we don't consider them a threat to the goals that we would like to achieve, but we consider them also potential partners. And as a private company, as Fair Capital, we can also make exceptions. Fair2C, as of today, is not making any exceptions. They focus on the fair trade system exclusively, just to be sure that there is a clear limitation of scope of what is done with the money from the private investors. However, with our institutional partners and as Fair Capital, we welcome new initiatives because at the end of the day, there is many, many challenges that smallholder farmers are facing. And especially in certain markets and in certain regions, the fair trade system cannot address all the challenges of the smallholder farmers.
Absolutely. But I like things that are focused. So the focus on financing issues in the fair trade system is very well taken. And thanks for sharing with us how you approach that and what you do. Maybe a personal question towards the end. You, in your career, you started out as a classic investment banker working at, I think, UBS and BNP Paribas. And so I want to ask a question that I often have from students that ask me, well, if I want to work in impact finance, should I go do an internship with an impact investor, such as maybe Fair Capital? Or is it better maybe to first earn some experience in a classic financial institution? What would you say?
I mean, I started my professional career more than 20 years ago. So I would say that things have luckily changed since then. When I started my professional career, it was very common that people would work first in the traditional financial sector to make their first experiences and learn more about the financial industry before then try to change things, as we like to call it. For me, that has definitely worked out very well. I think I learned a lot in my early years in banking. And I would still recommend this option as well for young graduates today that would like to explore a little bit more the financial industry before really kind of feeling ready to contribute to a progressive change of this financial system towards higher consideration of impact in investment decisions and more transparent reporting on ESG and SDG. I think that still works today, but I mean, if a young graduate today is willing to, you know, do the extra work and get the exposure from the beginning, maybe, you know, with a internship or a fellowship in Latin America or an African country, that is something that I would also see as a great option to grow professionally and start a career. I think it depends also a little bit on what type of impact you would like to create as a young professional. If you have a specific wish to focus on the Global South, as I had when I was young and started my career, or if you would like to focus on other impact themes where you can maybe have a job opportunity also here in Switzerland or Europe.
Very well. So some wise words from somebody who's gone the classic way. Thanks, Christoph, very much for sharing that. And well, to finish, there's lots of parts moving in impact investing, in sustainable finance in general. What kind of development would you think would really move this space forward? What do you wish for, let's say, over the next couple of years?
Another very good question. And maybe here I will have an answer which is different from what many other people currently working in impact investing would give. In my personal opinion, it's all there. I think we have the technology, we have the regulation, and we have the traction in the market to move things forward and to scale impact investing. There is maybe certain restrictions where I hope that regulators will continue to give innovative solutions a fair chance rather than only seeing the risks. But at the end of the day, what we need now is that investors themselves, the individuals, take the time to think about the impact they want to have with their investments, that they take the time to read a proposal carefully and try to understand it in detail. And I think this is what personally, I would like to ask for people who hear about us and think it's a interesting sector that we work in, and they believe that this could be something of interest to them. The only thing we can ask is that you take the time to really dig into the details and ask us the questions that you have, rather than giving up too quickly, because impact investing is relatively complex. And sometimes things appear risky when you look at it for the first time. Sometimes things appear maybe, not as attractive as a regular investment that the banker is proposing you. But I can assure you that if you take enough time to really dig into the details, you will learn that it is quite attractive. And not only what we offer, but also what other impact investment specialists are offering today.
Fantastic. Thanks for those closing words, Christoph. We don't want anything. We just want your time and attention. What a nice and humble request for this community. Thanks so much. And thanks for all the other insight. It has been very interesting. Thanks so much for being on the podcast.
I have to thank you, Julian. It was a great pleasure. You asked a lot of very, very good questions, and I'm glad we had the chance to discuss them.
Wonderful. Take care, Christoph.
You too. Thank you.
Innovations in Sustainable Finance, a University of St. Gallen podcast by Julian Kölbl.